Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 7:22 Irish summertime. Today is October 12th, and today being Friday, it's also the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But before we get into those longer-term themes, let's have a look at what's been happening over the last week. Well, gold broke out to a new high, so did platinum. Silver has been consolidating, and although they're a little bit weaker in here today, it certainly looks like we are moving into a period where these are going to move into an uptrend. The dollar rallied earlier in the week, but has given it up a little bit over the last couple of days, although slightly stronger above that 78 level in here today. Then, looking at the industrial metals, they are also in quite firm form, although also a little bit weaker in here today. The soft commodities, well, wheat has come off its high and it was limit up yesterday, so that was quite positive, but has given up much of that today. It's down to 860 and a half, provided it holds above the low that we saw 3 days ago. We can probably anticipate it going sideways for a while, but when we look at the other wheat contracts, particularly traded in France and in life in the UK, they have two lower highs now, and they had led on the upside as well. So there is a bit of pressure on the wheat price in here. That's probably the most notable of the grains over the last week. And of the other soft commodities, Arabica coffee and Robusta also, but particularly Arabica, does look like it's about to break upwards from a 3 year range and consolidation. It's one of the bigger patterns out there at the moment, and if it successfully breaks above 140, it's currently at 138.50. But if it successfully breaks above that 140 level, that would be a significant and important breakout, and is probably worth playing on, at least on a speculation. Looking at the bond markets, Treasuries are down 9 in here today. They're down to 110.11 and weakening a little bit in here, although not trending downwards. And that's rather positive for stock markets at the moment. The last thing I think stock markets would like to see is surging government bond yields, because it would put pressure on interest rates. And it does look like that for the next 6 months at least, we're probably going to be in an environment where interest rates could be coming down in the USA, and markets are certainly being priced to that effect over the last couple of weeks. Looking at stock markets, a number of well, the US markets had a significant downward pull yesterday. The Nasdaq 100 made a key day reversal and is up 1% today, 1.07%, 29 points on the composite. I looked at a lot of Nasdaq charts, and you'll see quite a few of them in the comment of the day today. But I had girded myself to see a lot of potential short-term top up formations, and in fact, most of those charts, they don't look that bad. A couple of them have accelerated on the upside, and they are looking a bit overextended, but not to any great extent generally. And I think that this index does look like it has further to go on the upside, but may consolidate for a couple of weeks, probably at the least, quite soon, because it is just a little bit overextended in the short term on an RSI basis. But because the Nasdaq pulled back a little bit yesterday, Asia was slightly weaker in here today. The Nikkei was down about 120 points, almost 130 points. The Hang Seng was down just over 1%, and the ASX in Australia down 23, which is about a third of 1%. But that's not anything close to a dynamic move. India, which has been absolutely surging over the last couple of weeks, pulled back a bit in here today, but certainly not a downward dynamic, and while overextended, that market had an important breakout a couple of weeks ago, well, a month ago, and this had been an explosion waiting to happen, quite literally, and that's what we've seen. And while it is overextended, the potential upside for this market over the very long term is quite outstanding. But at the moment, a number of markets are a bit overextended, and if we saw some consolidations over the next couple of weeks, that wouldn't be too surprising. However, the big question I think on a number of people's minds is whether we're in for a big reaction like we saw in mid which bottomed in mid-August. And personally, I think it's fairly unlikely because there had been a problem building in markets, particularly in relation to that subprime issue, for a number of months. And that came to a head towards the end of July, and we had a very serious pullback, particularly in those financial shares. But the worst of the effects of that on the stock market have passed. Now, the credit markets are continuing to deal with that, and LIBOR rates are still very high, and it will take a number of months before we can say that that problem has been worked through the credit markets. But the stock markets are a different story, and they are being affected to a much greater extent by the amount of liquidity that has been pumped into the system following this correction. And of course, this isn't the first time that we've seen large amounts of liquidity being pumped into the system to support markets. In fact, over the last 10 years alone, it's happened on a number of occasions. You had long-term capital management, the Russian debt default in no particular order, but long-term capital management collapsing, the Russian debt default, the Mexican crisis, I think it was the tequila crisis, I think they called it. You had Y2K, the Nasdaq bubble bursting, 9/11, and last year you also had the correction in mid-May that also resulted in a large amount of liquidity being pumped into the markets, and this August. So, given that that is fairly, it was always referred to as the Greenspan put, and increasingly being referred to now as the Bernanke put. But it was absolutely necessary to rescue the credit markets from seizing up entirely, and the commercial paper market is still very, very illiquid, regardless of how much money has been pumped into the system. Now, there has been a lot of sour grapes out there, particularly from the people who were short, as to the motivation behind this massive injection of liquidity, because people had said that it was bailing out the wrong types of investors. But the main motivation behind this injection of liquidity by the Fed and the ECB, and finally by the Bank of England, was to help support credit markets. And the credit markets are a lot bigger than the stock markets, and they're pretty much what the economy is based on, and it is imperative that they work in an orderly fashion. So it was pretty much beyond doubt that they were going to have to act, and the big question was how much they were going to act. And the rate cut of 50 basis points by the Fed was exactly what the doctor ordered, and stock markets have rallied significantly since then. Now, they are looking overextended, but it does not look like the 4 years and counting up trends have ended, although they have had a significant drawdown. As long as I should put a caveat on that. Emerging markets have moved to new highs, and the US markets have moved to new highs, probably benefiting from the weakness of the dollar. But European markets have not moved to new highs. A couple have, for example, some of the emerging Europeans and Finland, but not the majors, not the FTSE, not the DAX, not the SMI. They are still lagging, and that could also be attributed to the strength of their currencies, but it's also to do with the fact that you haven't had the same response there because there isn't the perception that there is the GDP growth to support the outperformance of these stock markets. The FTSE is performing right now because of the strength of its resources sector, and so many of those large resources companies are listed in the UK. But Europe is a bit of an underperformer. And that doesn't look likely to change. And as they are coming up towards their highs, we can anticipate them running into some sort of resistance around this level. However, Asian markets have accelerated upwards out of the above those highs that we saw at the end of July. And that is also an indication of where the growth is likely to come from in the coming years. Asia, without doubt, has overtaken the rest of the world in terms of GDP growth. Countries like India and China are in a demographic sweet spot where they have large populations that are at just the right age entering the workforce, and that is also likely to continue for a number of years. Getting back to the injection of liquidity, while in the short term it is a good fix for the economy, it does sow the seeds of future problems, not least because some of the people that were bailed out by it are likely to just rush back and get back to exactly the wrong type of trading that they had profited from before, and getting another asset class into trouble. But the longer term worry is inflationary. You can't simply keep printing wads of cash without the value of that cash eventually losing value. But the central banks of the world are much happier to do that than they are to allow the deflationary fears, and they are much more afraid of deflation than inflation, to raise their heads, because there is the perception that they know how to handle inflation. They can raise interest rates and they can tighten up and hopefully bring it under control. But they are much more frightened of deflation, so they will always err on the side of inflation. And they will, while they always are inclined to talk tough about inflation, and the ECB in particular over the last couple of days has been talking tough on inflation, they are much more likely to err on causing inflation than they are to in on actually really fixing it. And that means that with this amount of liquidity in the markets, they are likely to continue in their various uptrends, particularly in those Asian markets, because they are attracting so much more now of global investment capital. But that is likely to go on until we see some sort of global recession. Now, there was a lot of talk in mid-August that the US was going to move into recession, and that is also now looking increasingly unlikely. And the rest of the world may slow in line, although not as much as the US economy, but it's very, very unlikely that we're going to get a global recession anytime this year, probably not next. It may even be upwards of 2009 or 2010 before that happens. But when that does happen, markets are going to pull back, and we're going to get significantly better buying opportunities then than we're getting now, although potentially, well, probably from higher levels than markets are at right now. But that is also going to provide more liquidity into the markets over the coming years. Inflation is going to increasingly become a problem. And government bond yields bottomed in 2003. And while a number of people are still doubting that fact, one look at the chart is all you need to look at. Look at it over a monthly basis and look at 20 or 30 years, and it's quite clear that government bond yields have bottomed. That means that the deflationary environment which we've enjoyed for much of the last 20 years is over, and we're at the beginning of a new inflationary cycle, which is being fueled by the liquidity that's being poured into the markets. Right now, and over the next 6 months, we're probably in a mini cycle where inflationary fears are going to abate or be ignored in an effort to help support global economies. But with that injection of liquidity, inflationary fears have been deferred, and they're likely to raise their heads once more in the not too distant future, probably sometime in 2008. And however much interest rates are lowered over the next 6 months to 9 months, They're certainly not going to get back to the lows where they were at 1% in the USA. And when they start to rise once more, looking a year forward, they're going to reach a peak above today's levels. And over the next decade or so, we're going to see mini cycles where inflationary fears become less of a worry, and increasingly longer periods where they do become a worry. And that is going to create problems for stock markets in particular, because the average investor is going to look at the yield on the government bonds, and when government bonds yields are rising, they're going to become increasingly a competition for the return that can be received on equities. That's certainly not a problem now, but surging government bond yields are something that we need to keep an eye on, because when they start to push upwards, that is going to be an increasing headwind for global stock markets. Going forward, if inflationary pressures become greater, and they are likely to do so, then hard assets are going to become much more valuable as an actual commodity to invest in, to be a store of value. Gold has historically been a store of value for millennia, and having broken upwards toward to new highs from this long consolidation, this is an important move. And while it's consolidating over the last couple of days, when you look at that longer term pattern, and you can go to the chart library to see that, it does look absolutely pregnant with potential, and we could see gold moving significantly higher quite soon, but also significantly higher over the longer term. And the same goes for the other precious metals. When we also look at the concerns that are have arisen recently over property, now property prices accelerated pretty much globally, particularly in the Anglo-Saxon world and Spain, over the last 5 years because interest rates were so low and mortgages were so easy to get. But that also, because that period has ended, the period of time in which Anglo-Saxon real estate, at the very least, has outperformed other asset classes is probably over. But because of those inflationary concerns, I question how very far the price of property is going to fall. Maybe it falls 10 or 20%, but is it going to fall 80% like our some commentators are predicting? I personally don't think so. But I think what we can say with a fairly high degree of certainty is that the period of outperformance of real estate in the Western world as an asset class has probably ended. It'll probably hold its value, but it probably will not outperform other asset classes, which is definitely something to keep in mind. Now, that is probably not the case for Asian real estate, because Asia is currently undergoing the greatest urbanization in history. The populations of India and China, which are almost 2.5 billion people, are swiftly moving in towards the cities. And the infrastructure development that has to go on there is pretty unparalleled in the rest of the world, although a number of other economies are racing to catch up. And just about every country in the world at the moment is building infrastructure, particularly those that have large populations, and the USA is absolutely no exception there. But that also puts pressure on real estate prices. So we can, if anyone were that interested in investing in real estate, even though personally I think it's an asset class that is unlikely to outperform all others, Asia is probably the way to go in that regard. But we've also seen that art prices are hitting new highs, and with all of the other commodities also appreciating in price. This is without doubt an unparalleled commodity boom, and I don't think it can even be compared to the 1970s, because This is not so much a supply issue, and this is really the first time, particularly for those agricultural commodities, which has been a demand-driven bull market. Because every other cycle, and you can see the long-term charts of the grains in particular, they go up one year and they come down the next because there was a drought one year, and then all the farmers go out and plant whatever was in short supply the year before, and there's an oversupply the following year. But when we look at global stockpiles of grains, they're at historic lows, and that is also against a period of time when we haven't had a very big crop scare. We're getting something like that right now in wheat, where you've had drought in a number of countries and they've had to cut back on their estimates of their harvests. And we've seen wheat accelerate to probably a high near $9. But it's unlikely that we're going to see that fall back right back into its base next year when a number of farmers will have planted a lot more wheat to avail of of this year's price next year, which is probably unlikely. But what is the important fact here is regardless of how much wheat is produced next year as a result of more farmers planting it, stockpiles will still be really quite low, and it's unlikely that wheat is going to be the main crop that's planted the year after next, because other commodities will have gone up in price as a result of less of them being planted because so many other farmers are planting wheat next year. So the important point here is that demand is growing for grains and stockpiles are at all-time lows. This is pointing towards a secular bull market in the agricultural commodities. When we look at those inflation-adjusted prices, they're not timing tools, but they do give us an indication of just how low these prices are in historical terms. When living standards increase, and they are increasing gradually right across the developing world, the first thing that any person does when they have more money and they are just above starvation is that they buy more food and they eat better. People often think that it's the number of cars in a country that is the important thing to look at, but that comes significantly further down the line in terms of development. When the per capita income of a country starts to increase, their consumption of food will also increase. It's simple common sense. And with the development that's going on, particularly in India and China, and the increase in per capita income that can be anticipated over the next 10 to 12, 15 years, it is also an indication of just how much more food they are going to be eating. And that is driving the demand side of this bull market in soft commodities. Because all of these young people are entering the workforce, starting families of their own, and of course looking for jobs themselves, that is an incredible infrastructure boom. It's a secular move, and it's not something that's going to be over any time in the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. The people who are looking at resources in China and India are out there, and they are securing long-term assets at a rate that is incomparable to the way Western companies are going about the same business. Because there is still something of a disbelief in the Western world as to the longevity of this boom in the industrial commodities. But there is no such compunction in the emerging world. They have long-term plans for what they want to build and the type of societies that they want to create, and that is going to necessitate absolutely huge investment in infrastructure. And it's something that the resources sector is plugged directly into. And particularly when so many of our subscribers are from the UK, the USA, and Australia, there are a number of excellent resources companies in those countries which are direct plays on the infrastructure boom right across Asia and the emerging world. So that is something that is very much to have a position in for the longer term, but also because Asia is growing and is the GDP capital of the world and is likely to maintain that position for a significant period of time, we can anticipate that GDP growth will follow through with stock market performance. And together with the fact that following the Asian financial crisis, so many of those Asian currencies were remarkably undervalued and are now starting to appreciate. So, with Asia appreciating in terms of GDP growth, in terms of societal development, in terms of the diets of people, their standard of living's rising, stock markets outperforming, and currencies appreciating, it is likely to be one of the most vibrant places in the world over the next decades, and I think any investor should have an overweight in that area because it is likely to outperform the vast majority of markets in the Western world. Looking at the bond markets in relation to that, I just want to come back to the point that with longer term interest rates rising, that is a bull market for long dated government bond yields, and bond prices will be under pressure for a significant period of time going forward. And with just two last things to talk about, I now have a test version of the new favorite section of the chart library, and I'm testing that at the moment. Our head of IT has just gone on holiday. He'll be back in a week. We'll iron out the bugs, and you should have that in the next 10 to 15 days. That will allow you to create multiple favorites lists, and it is looking quite user-friendly from the 5 minutes I've spent playing around with it this afternoon. But I'll be testing that a bit more over the next week. And I'm also being interviewed by Today FM, which is an independent Irish radio station, on Sunday morning, their Sunday business show. And I think they primarily want me to talk about the global stock market situation, interest rates, but more or less how that is affecting Ireland. So that can also be listened to on the internet if anyone is interested. But thank you very much for your time, and I hope you have a very good weekend.